of a sea keeper.
OCO. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio, coming to you worldwide on the internet. Visit prophecykeepers.com today.
OCO.
Well, hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the tops of the Rocky Mountains. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio for the 6th of December, 2008. The mission of the White Roots of Peace Council through Prophecy Keepers Foundation, which is a 501c3 charity and foundation, is to fulfill the wishes of the Hopi, Cherokee, and Iroquois White Roots of Peace gathering elders of the 1960s. And sending their prophetic messages around the world to establish peace through the worldwide realization of our ancient common global relatedness. This transmission of prophecies was prophesied in the Hopi prophecies to occur once the House of Micah, or the United Nations, was built and later visited by the prophecy keepers, and their further instructions differed depending on whether they were allowed to speak or not allowed. They were effectively barred from speaking at the United Nations because they were only allowed to speak when no one was of importance was listening. Since they were barred from speaking at the House of Micah, their original set of instructions stated that they were to use any means necessary to get the messages out. The original Prophecy Keeper elders are mostly all dead now, themselves stating that Purification Day would closely follow their deaths, but a few adopted sons and daughters still remain to carry on, themselves getting up in age. These prophecy messages are of utmost importance to the future of the planet, when very few survivors of the final Holocaust will eventually meet each other, and the differences between them need to be minimized so that life will go on in a peaceful manner. Before we get started, I'd like to talk about our sponsor, secretsofanimmortal.com. What if you met a man who was 2,800 years old? What questions would you ask him about history, religion? What would you want to learn about his secrets of immortality? The author of Secrets of an Immortal, Ben Alba, went looking for the oldest person alive on Earth today. He wanted to find out from them what they eat and what they do and to accomplish such a long and healthy life. And to his absolute shock, he located and made contact with a man whose real physical age is nearly 2,800 years old. Would you like to know more about the story on how he found such a remarkable man and what stories he had to tell about the unwritten history of our Western civilization? Visit secretsofanimmortal.com. Our guest this evening is Adam Yellowberg of the Institute for Cultural Awareness. He's going to be speaking about the Mayan prophecies of the return of the ancestors. Welcome, Adam. How are you this evening?
Good evening. I'm calling in from Arizona, Cornville, Arizona.
Yeah, you're down near Sedona, huh?
Yes, we are, and beautiful sunny day today, clear skies, and you just can't beat that.
Well, why don't you tell folks a little bit about yourself?
My life is, I'm 37 years old. And my life has entailed a multicultural background, growing up in diverse cultures and traditions and spiritual ways there. And my heritage is actually Hebrew. My bloodline is Hebrew. In about 1992, I was adopted by Joseph Flying by the Hunkpapa family of the Lakota Nation, the people in South Dakota of Little Eagle. And since then, been working throughout the United States with the indigenous people, Native Americans, from the east to west, north to south, and have gone from that direction to the four corners of the world, spreading the messages and sitting with the elders and prophecy keepers of this time. And at that time in 93, I was given the name Zinkalazi, which is a yellow bird, to be as a messenger and to carry that message and that mission and medicine to the people. So in a nutshell there, that's somewhat that this we have come to find that this is my destiny and my path to become a bridge person in that manner.
Oh, yeah. I've, of course, I get my Cherokee and Powhatan and Shawnee Bloods are my mother, but my father's father was born in Skaraborg, which is like a county in Sweden.
Yes.
And that area was the headquarters for the Vikings.
Yes.
And believe it or not, I'm a Benjamite.
Uh-huh, yeah. It's all, you know, it's about indigenous. Indigenous being not a color. Indigenous peoples are ones that live with the earth and land and with simplicity and connected to the cosmic knowledge.
That's right. Yeah, that's, yeah, the Benjamites, it's an interesting story. We'll have to do, we're going to get Rabbi Michiel Baron back on sometime, and then we'll talk about that. Well, tell us about Earth Dance International, unless you want to talk about something else first.
Yeah, no, the Earth Dance 8 International Multicultural Gathering, a little over 11 years ago, just about 12 years ago, I went up on a vision quest on the top of the San Francisco Peaks over here, that is a very holy mountain in Arizona, well known by the Hopis and the resting place of the Kachinas and many spiritual guardians of the land. And I received a vision about a dance, and they called it the Earth Dance. And this dance would unite all cultures, all races, religions, peoples, medicine peoples to come together to pray once again with Mother Earth and get back in harmony with the earth, air, fire, and water, and let go of our pain and suffering and struggles, and to clean the slate and heal those wounds. So we've been doing that. We seeded that in Mexico, in Tecate, Mexico, on the border of San Diego and Mexico, California.
Hmm. Fascinating. So how long you been doing? Did you say you've been doing that?
We're going on. This is over 20 dances we've held. We've done this internationally in Europe and also throughout the United States. In Mexico, we started again, and then we've been holding. It's going on our 11th year here, and we're going on 8 years in Arizona coming up in 2009. And we've gone to the Missouri, Central United States, and also Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. One was held way back in 1999.
Well, that's interesting. Was the type of dance in your vision, was it what was revealed as to the type of dance it was? Clockwise, counterclockwise, round dance?
We work with both sunwise and moonwise and sunset. We had many ceremonies that were done several hundred years ago. Ones were known as the ghost dance or spirit dance there. And they said those that will return, those that will go over the waters and come make it over to the other side will come back with many different robes and colors and races. There was part sayings in this way. And those that made it over will come back and continue the dreams of the ancestors, of the forefathers and mothers that were taken. They would bring back the new ceremonies that would help the people and give them hope and inspiration and unity, not only now for one nation, but for all nations. So that was brought back through, you know, past times here to be gifted so that we could move forward in today's time.
That's interesting because the original ghost dance, you and I talked about this over the phone.
Yeah.
Jimmy Ten Rivers of the Membrino Apache was told through spirit it was time to reinstitute the original ghost dance. And a friend of mine brought him over to my house here last January, and he said, "What do you know about the ghost dance?"
Yeah.
And I held my finger up. I said, "Wait a minute." And I walked over to the TV and opened up the DVD, dropped the DVD in, and fast-forwarded it about 51 minutes, and it was the first Billy Jack movie.
Yes.
And he kind of laughed. I said, "Now, wait a minute now." I said, "What you may not know is that Andy Vidovich, who was Wovoka's grandson, was on the cast and crew, and he taught the original ghost dance. And so I took the clip of just the ghost dance, and you can tell it's really important because they actually hired a helicopter to lift off and show how the dance was done. And he's just trying to figure out the songs. But he was given, we'll have to have him back on. He was on a few weeks ago. I have to have him, but he was on with Jay Lone Wolf, and like to have him back on. But yeah, tell us some more what you're doing.
So this is where, you know, in inspiration, where it came from, and through the ancestral prayers and through the vision quest that we received these messages and took counsel, actually traveled throughout the United States and then onward throughout the Americas to seek guidance for this dance and this ceremony, and has been blessed by many nations, many peoples, and we've been continuous of doing the ceremonies, and it's working again with the earth, air, fire, and water, and certain sequences, dancing, working with star formations, and not only the tree of life, but we have actually five trees or five altars honoring these elements and these directions here, and it's a very simple dance, but very powerful ceremony to, again, help us connect to our ancestral roots and be able to heal the wounds, to clean the slate and the suffering and pain of the past and be together now as one. So these relatives, they come in from all parts of the world, to dance and to pray, and we're able to spend those 4 days and nights together around the fires and elementals to really bring healing back, you know, to Mother Earth. That's why we call it an Earth dance, to give thanks for Mother Earth. And again, we dance during the day and night. And the moon, it's done towards full moon. Third day is full moon. And then daytime sun. So we're working sun and moon, too.
Interesting. A lot of folks may not know that the Hebrews had a lot of respect for the four directions. Matter of fact, a good friend of mine, Robert Three Eagles, introduced me to the Zohar and how to make petition during, say, the first mention of the moon. But there's, you know, angels for all the different directions. And it's pervasive. It's in every culture. It's interesting you said you're coming up on 11 years now, because the most important number in totemism is 11.
Yes.
And another thing I think is interesting is that this next spring, you know, March, April, will be the 120th year of the visitation of Jesus at Walker Lake, Nevada.
Yes.
And that was interesting, because that's four generations, I guess, the way the Jews figure. The way that you, hang on a second. Sorry about that, landlord at the door. I didn't know who it was. I thought it was my wife. Anyway, yeah, lots of interesting things going on. So, tell me more.
Actually, you're bringing up Nevada and out there in Wovoka land there, too. Actually, we studied for many years. We went out there wondering why, you know, receiving these visions and dreams about the dance. And so we actually studied the sacred sites and out at Wellington and down the lands, and actually the first ceremonial site that Wovoka had out there for the dance, the Stone Circle Ring. And so we spent weeks at a time hiking and intuitively taking in and praying and, you know, using the sacreds and having sweat lodge in that area to get reconnected with all the works that the indigenous people had done there on the lands and the potential, you know, places where they've had their vision quests and ceremonials. So we spent, actually stayed out there for 6 weeks straight working with the lands.
And this was where?
This was around Wellington, Nevada, and actually Wovoka's original homestead site where he was living.
Yeah, south end of the reservoir out there.
Yeah, it's set off Pyramid Lake.
That's right. Well, yeah, tell us tell us more. Tell us about the ICA or what your different activities are.
The Institute for Cultural Awareness is a multicultural organization. We offer a safe space for health and healing. We're motivated with the desire to build a future for our children. We bring the ceremonial peoples in, the leaders in, medicine peoples to come share their wisdom and knowledge. You know, we would bring elders in and also perform the blessing, marriage ceremonies, rites of passage, ceremonials. Also, our goals are rooted in holistic healing. On the at the center here, we have the sweat lodges, and we have Kiva here, and we're trying to inspire the community too, you know, to get more into the indigenous or native, you know, type of housing or teepees rather than using you know, rent-a-tents and things of that nature, trying to bring that to some of the awareness there.
Well, you said you were... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, again, it's just, you know, our motive is to really, you know, the preservation for our children, for the future generations, ultimately, is in building a safe and healthy environment for that culture exchange and healing to take place.
Also, well, I'm sorry.
Yes, to dedicated to preserving the sacred sites of indigenous traditions, and to help the environment, things of that nature, you know.
Well, you said you were 37. How long have you been walking the Red Road? What got you started?
It was in the Red Road. I started walking in 92 when I was asked to come up to a Sundance up in Little Eagle, South Dakota, on the Standing Rock Reservation. So I was welcomed in and had the sweats, and they prepared me for the Sundance. And, you know, we went through the vision quest, the hombleches and everything, to prepare ourselves. And so...
Well, Frank Fulsker was still alive then, wasn't he?
Back in... I think so. I just...
Yeah.
The Red Road... For myself, personally, but actually my parents, my family, had been involved with the Anipi and sweat lodges and ceremonials ever since I was a child. It's just I wasn't too drawn. I didn't know, you know, exactly the tradition. I wasn't drawn, and they always let me, you know, somewhat be a free spirit in that way. But that was when I really got rooted and strong coming out of teens, that I was really seeking something, some discipline and ceremonials to take it to the next step or next level, you know.
Sounds like your parents were hippies.
Yeah, the alternative way.
I'll bet they knew Rolling Thunder.
Yeah, they probably.
Mhm.
Yeah, they did travelings and all that. Lived real good and healthy, but just an alternative, you know, way of life there, of living and staying connected in that time too, to stay really connected with the Mother Earth and in educational ways, but to keep that the material and spiritual in balance.
Fantastic. Well, listen, are you ready to invite folks to call in? It may be a while before they actually call, but we can give the number out if you'd like.
Yeah, we can, sure.
Okay, if you're in the United States, you can call in to 877-876-5227. That's, once again, 877-876-5227. If you're listening in Canada, call us at 888-815-9756, 888-815-9756. And well, you've got a lot going on there, and a lot of different websites. You've got the Earth Dance website and the ICA website, and what else you got going on? You got some great graphics.
Yeah, what our most recent project over the last 4 years? Under our 501c3 Institute for Cultural Awareness is called Earthworks for Humanity. And this vision came forth from the Earth Dance. It was how could we go out to the broader communities nationally and internationally and bring the indigenous peoples together. And so our Earthworks for Humanity website is all about that. It's about our sacred pilgrimages, our travels to the sacred lands, to the temples, to the pyramids, shrines of the ancient and holy people, and our elders or our grand elders that are still holding this wisdom and knowledge. And our focus has actually taken us to Europe, to the East and to the West, to Japan, to the Asians, all the way down through South and Central Americas and up through the North into Canada, through Canada.
Well, I know she calls me her nephew. My auntie, Chokosh Alho'o, has been active in Earth Death out in California. She's a Chumash elder.
Right.
And have you? Did you get a chance to meet her?
No, I haven't. I haven't had a chance. No, not yet.
She's the one that the Oribe elders gave the, what we call the Hopi 10, which you can look at prophecykeepers.com. Kind of a mental checklist. We kind of expand on that over at survivalismskills.com.
Right.
And it's the different skills and awarenesses that the Hopi elders wanted people to have. And
oh, yeah, I think I've heard of that. Yeah, the book.
Yeah, it's she had a really interesting experience. She did two interviews with us, and they're archived on the website. And but yeah, I don't know, for some reason Spirit keeps wanting me to ask you more about yourself.
About myself.
Yeah, dreams and visions and stuff.
Well, my ultimate goal, you know, I know my mission here too is healing thyself. You know, first I have to heal myself and get myself connected. All through life, you know, I've been going through a process of purification in a way, you know, coming into the world too. We go through a lot of purification, mind, body, and spirit, and do that in different ways. But to clean myself, to come with a clean mind, clean body, clean spirit now, and working on my reconnectedness to the land, to create, you know, gardens and food and you know, production, you know, for the future, you know, so we're working on that too very much, to keep the gardens alive, to keep the connection with the rivers and our lands and mountaintops. So I like getting out and spending that time with the, you know, earth, air, fire, and water, the elementals there. And you know, myself, actually, I'm, you know, I do healing and work, medicine work with people. We work in consultation and help people in that way to, you know, make them in a better way and better off, you know, whatever ways we can do to help them.
What do you do to raise funds?
To raise the funds?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for myself, it's people do an exchange in that way, too. So what they do is, you know, our motto is we never turn anybody away, so what they can do an offer is you know, up to them like that. But, you know, my trait and everything is a carpenter. I'm a carpenter by trait, and so I have the skills in landscaping to raise my funds, you know, to keep everything sustaining and going like that.
Good. It's a good trade. My son's a carpenter.
Yeah.
And lives up in the Seattle area. And he loves it. He's very well paid. Didn't have to do 4 years of college and started out making three times what I started out making. You know, he started out making like $27 an hour. I think he's making $35 now.
Yeah.
Which is, that's just insane. You know, the average person coming out of college makes about half that.
Yeah.
It's a good trade.
Yeah, I love it. It's working with my hands. Well, that's how I learned the skills too, you know, through working with people, working with foundations and homes and all the skills in those areas, and I implemented that into my other work with consultations and prayers and blessings again, you know. And I have to put it forth to the elders and my teachers, you know, that taught me and mentored me to get to this point in that way, too, you know. So now we've pretty much dedicated our time to the Institute for Cultural Awareness and to our, you know, our healing endeavors, healing works, and the gatherings that we're doing here too, and most of this is done, you know, in house or by through angel donors too. We get a lot of angel donors. You know, there is grants and things of that nature out there, but we really appreciate those that support, you know, in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had an angel donor today. It's a long story. It's amazing what's going to happen. Hey, folks, the phone lines are open in the U.S. Call us at 877-876-5227. In Canada, call us at 888-815-9756. Now, let's see. Did I hear something about a fourth intercontinental indigenous Congress or something?
Yeah, what our organization has been asked to host the fourth reunion of the Continental Council of Indigenous Elders and Spiritual Guides of the Americas. Now, this was initiated by our Grand Elder, Alejandro Cirilio Oxla Perez. He's the president of the National Mayan Council of Elders of Guatemala and the president of the Continental Council of Indigenous Elders and Spiritual Guides of the Americas. And he's one of the top prophecy keepers of this time.
And we got a phone call.
Yes.
We'll talk more about Don Alejandro. Yeah, caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Mark. I'm from Colorado.
Well, welcome to the show. Do you have a question for Adam?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
The question I had is, Adam had his vision, he said, back about 11 years ago on San Francisco Peaks. And my question was, is there seems to be a lot of people that had things happening to them around that same time. And I'm wondering if Adam is aware of other people that have had similar experiences, if they have certain other things going. If Adam feels that this was a change around that time in the world in terms of other people getting visions and stuff like him.
Yes. Hey, Mark, good to hear your voice. I'm back home here. And yes, I have heard. There's a certain allotment in times where I believe the stars are open, and when we return back to these holy places or sacred mountains like San Francisco Peaks, known to the Hopis and many nations, that it's almost like a beacon or a transmitter for us to be able to receive this wisdom and knowledge. So those that have been privileged to be or guided to those sacred places or have crossed paths, I do believe, yes, I've heard many stories around the same time, and you'll find that it comes in a sequence or a flow like that.
Yeah, Mark, are you familiar with what happened on May 5th of
1997?
Down at Rocky Ridge, the Navajo Reservation.
Hold on, you're breaking up. I didn't quite hear that.
The on May 5th, 1997. Now, Rocky Ridge is where the Navajos have held a Sundance for, you know, quite a long time. And on May 5th, which the Latinos celebrate as, you know, Cinco de Mayo, of course, there was two women living out at Rocky Ridge, and one was a middle-aged woman and her living with her. I think she was about an 80-year-old mother-in-law. And the mother-in-law had not spoken in years. And they were just in the house, you know, working or whatever they were doing that day, and they heard a whistle and something that sounded like a dull explosion. And the old woman, who hadn't spoken in years, said, "We've got visitors." And the younger woman opened the front door, and there were two Navajo deities dressed in white, standing about a foot off the ground inside a circle of corn pollen. And they delivered a message that the Hopi, or excuse me, the Navajo, the Diné traditionals were to get back to the original diet, because the white man's diet was killing them. They were to attend to their ceremonies up in their holy mountains. And they were told if they didn't do this, they weren't going to survive as a nation. And, of course, that was big news. That was in, you know, three or four newspapers, and they had thousands of people that went out and pilgrimage out to that area. It was a big deal. Well, the interesting thing was, is the day before that, I had moved down to Moab, Utah. We were caretaking a place. It was 300 acres owned by a mining company. And I was up on the roof May 4th, putting new pads in my swamp cooler, and my son was up there with me, and this little voice in my head just said, "Hey, I'll look up." And I looked up, and there was a huge cloud formation of an eagle. We both saw it. If I had a camera, you'd be absolutely stunned because it left nothing to the imagination. It was an eagle, only all of its feathers were white or varying shades of white. You could see all the details of the feathers. Wow. It was a very windy day.
Oh. Blue otter?
Yeah.
That year, that's interesting because a long time ago, back around the same time that Adam was having his vision on San Francisco Peaks, I had a vision, and I was doing a drumming vision, and in it, there was a very large white eagle.
Well, I know what you mean, and. I didn't know about what happened the next day until several weeks later, but about two weeks, after I saw the cloud eagle, I was working in a music store downtown Moab, and a young Diné couple walked in. Uh-huh. And, I said, "Hey, I see you guys are you Navajo?" And they said, "Yeah." And I told them about what I'd seen, and they, I mean, the guy looked at his wife and said, you're telling me you're Belagana and you saw the cloud eagles? I said, "What do you mean?" He said, my mother is a traditional, who lives down at Kayenta, and he said that there was probably about a dozen traditionals down in a northern area that saw the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 97 was a really important year.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, tell us more, Mark.
Huh?
Yeah, go ahead and tell us some more.
I've noticed and I've talked with a lot of people over the last few years and that time period for me was significant too, and Adam knows because some of the things that I've shown him, and over the years I've talked with other people and it seems like a fairly sizable number of people had significant things happen to them about that time frame, and I believe that something happened then at that time. I think we altered course.
Yes.
On Earth.
Yeah, yeah. Also, we had the harmonic convergence then around. Was that in? Oh, that was 87.
Yeah, that was 10 years before.
Yeah, 10 years before.
I think Humboldt's men did his first solar initiation a couple years before that.
Right. So it's been a progress of all of the leaders and guides, I think, helping hold the portals or the doorways open too for the for us to be able to receive these messages and visions and dreams.
Interesting. Hey, Mark, tell us some more about yourself.
I've talked with Adam, and I first met him in 1997 in April, May, and I had a back in 97, actually it was 98 when I recorded it. I recorded essentially a new Zolkin calendar. And back before I met Adam, I'd asked for some confirmation from the creator. I said, I want to know if this stuff is real or not. Well, about 2 weeks later, the White Buffalo Miracle Second Chance died. And I looked at this, because I was born about 80 miles due west of Janesville, Wisconsin, where the first White Buffalo Calf Miracle was born, so I'd kind of kept on that story. And I contacted this lady, Stephanie Schwartz, who works with the Lakota and writes, and she knows Adam, too. And I got some information about the death of this white buffalo. And in the newspaper article, it said that Miracle Second Chance, the owner, Dave Hyder, said that So it was kind of strange because Miracle Second Chance was born in a storm and died in a storm. Well, I punched up the birth date and the death date for that white buffalo calf in a program that I have that calculates the new Zolkin. And the glyphs, tones and glyphs for that white buffalo calf's birth and death both came up as a storm glyph. And he was born in a storm and died in a storm. So that, and I felt kind of bad because I thought, I had asked for confirmation from Creator on this, and I thought, now this white buffalo calf dies, right? And I got the confirmation. Well, that led to me contacting Stephanie. I talked with Stephanie, and I told Stephanie, and I told her about some stuff, and at a certain point in time, Stephanie says, You need to talk to Adam.
Do you remember do you remember what his glyph was?
Huh?
Do you remember which glyph it was?
It looks like the Mayan Kuat glyph.
Interesting. Yeah.
Kuat.
Yeah. And so I worked on some stuff and I got a bunch of different information and I talked to a friend of Adam's, Jim Beard, and I worked up a kind of a presentation thing for the Hopi, and Adam and I and Jim and Stephanie and my wife Mira, we all went up to Hopi land, and we visited a couple Hopi elders there. I can say who they are, I guess. But,
yeah,
sure.
Right, Adam?
Yeah, you can say.
Okay. It was Grandfather Lawrence on First Mesa and Grandfather Martin on Third Mesa, and we went to Grandfather Lawrence's first, and I walk in, and he said, he told me, well, I had a vision, a dream, actually. He said dream, that someone was going to, there were two people. One was going to bring me Mayan stuff, and the second one was going to bring me Egyptian stuff. And so I gave him the Mayan stuff. And he showed me some petroglyph stuff, but what was interesting is I got a real solid confirmation because I pulled up my PowerPoint presentation I had, so you can imagine showing Hopi's PowerPoint presentations, right? That's a brilliant thing, but that's what I did. And I had the thing for Miracle Second Chance, the birth and the death, and I showed kind of why I was coming and visiting Adam and everybody because of this. This triggered it, right? This white buffalo dying, it happened to match these two Zolkin dates in the new Zolkin. Well, it was very interesting because his eyes just stopped. And he pointed to the birth date for the white buffalo calf, Miracle Second Chance. He said, that's my birthday. He was born on August 25th, the same day.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, now what's the chances of that being, you know. So I took that as another confirmation from Creator that we were on the right path.
Yeah,
and yeah. I left him some stuff. Well, just yesterday, Adam took a file up there, which I have a scan, a photo of a Egyptian temple, ceiling temple. And I wrote on there, I said, Grandfather Lawrence, I visited you on May 5th, 2007. Remember you told me about your dream, someone bringing you Mayan, someone bringing you Egyptian? I said, here's the Egyptian stuff. And it's a tomb, the temple ceiling of Siamat. And I said, if you look at the stars on this ceiling, these stars will be the stars in the sky for the third world. And Adam just took that to him yesterday, I think.
Yeah, I just returned back from a full day up at Hopi land with the clans up there and Prophecy Keepers yesterday, or last night. Yeah.
Interesting. Have you met Chief Mike's children? He was the last chief at Arrivee.
No, I haven't. Personally, no, I haven't.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, let me tell you guys something interesting about... I never really connected with the Mayan calendar here until this last year. Robert Three Eagles has got a Mayan teacher who was chased out of Mexico. He was told if he didn't leave, he'd be killed, and... Anyway, he moved up to Cedar City, Utah, and this man wrote a book on Mayan astrology that had not been translated out of Spanish, and Robert did the translation because Robert, when he was 16 years old, about 30 years ago, he went down and spent about 10 years in Mexico and Guatemala. But anyway, so he was telling me, he said, well, he says, your Mayan birth date is 9 Ik. It's IQ, 9 Ik, and he says that's wind
date. Your birthday,
9 Ik.
No, what day? Gregorian calendar?
Oh, December 8, 54.
December what?
8.
8? 1954?
Right. And,
yeah, you're right, it is. Oh, you know what? Let me interrupt for a second real quick, Blue Otter. It is 9 Ik, but this has something to do with Adam.
Sure, go ahead.
Before I forget. Adam, on your Earth dance?
Yes.
The symbol has a, and I sent you an email this morning about this. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but The Earth Dance symbol has a six-pointed star and a five-pointed star.
Yes, yes.
Okay, now if you take those two stars and you do both the left and the right rotation or spin of the stars, then you'll have 22 points, and that will be the 9-eek in the Mayan calendar is day 22.
Yes, yes.
So Blue Otter, essentially Blue Otter's birthday, is Mayan birthday, is sitting on your Earth Dance symbol. It's written on there in number.
Well, anyway, so, you know, I was, you know, he was teaching me, and, of course, he handed over to me how to figure out, you know, and explain and teach people about the Mayan birthday. And anyway, a few weeks ago, I was doing a little bit of research on 9-eek, and I ran across a website that said that the week of 9-eek began on spring solstice of 1998, and I almost fell off my chair because it's been on my website, you know, ever since then. On that morning, early that morning, it was spring solstice of 98, Creator came to me, just a voice in a dream, and all he said was, I remember the quote, he says, "In the future, the year 2005 will be known as the year of the great havoc because the weather will become so bad that it may shut down computers all over the planet." And I was to wake up and write that down.
Yeah.
So I woke up and wrote it down, and I was absolutely astounded here. I've been sitting here, you know, for almost 10 years and didn't know. And, of course, in September of 2004, Rabbi Michael Barron started watching for a fulfillment of that prophecy. And, of course, everybody remembers what happened in 2005. And in November of 2005, he sent me a link to a Toronto newspaper about a meeting of UN climatologists. And they characterized the year as a year of weather havoc.
Yeah, wow.
And
wow.
He said, "Blue Otter, I don't know if you realize this or not," he says, "but that's the most detailed fulfillment of prophecy in 2,700 years."
Wow.
And I said, "Hey, don't look at me. What me?" I said, "It's Creator." I said, "I'm not going to make the same mistake Moses made." But it really is astounding what can come through and how it comes through and what the timing is of it.
Yes. Yeah. I want to share a little more. I'm not sure how much more time we have.
Oh, we got until the top of the hour.
Okay. But, again, with all of this and the prophecies as we're going in that direction, too, and everything that we're all getting and receiving in this time, again, you know, talking about the return of the ancestors, and this return of the ancestors is actually a prophecy that states at the time of the 12 Baktun and the 12, or 13, excuse me, the 12 Baktun and 13 Ahau is the time of the return of our ancestors and the return of men of wisdom. And it says this time is now. And that's what Grandfather Alejandro brought to the table in the sharing the message, which was the call for the 403 Union and Continental Council of Indigenous Elders and Spiritual Guides of the Americas to come together to share their prophecies, to share their culture once again, to share their wisdom and knowledge, and the youth, to bring the youth together here. This will be taking place in northern Arizona. And we do believe it's time for a change, but also with the new information and maybe the new plans or new life plans to be set into motion or the new calendars.
Interesting. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think if we look at the past world cycles and the changes, usually what you see, you know, if you go back to Egypt, you go back to the Mayans, you go back all over the world, they were dealing with a 360-day cycle, year cycle. And all in the Chinese, too. And every single one of them, when the shift happens, they all say basically the same thing, and they all tacked on 5 days onto the end of their year. And they said that the seasons changed, you know, they were out of whack. So one of them went from, basically they skipped winter. They didn't have a winter. And the Chinese Emperor Yuan, he ordered people to figure out what was going on, and they did a calendar change. And so, you know, when you really look at it, if you look at the stars changed in the sky, and everything changed. And, you know, so they basically had to recalibrate all their stuff, because when they're calculating the seasons and their longitude and latitude based on the pole star and figuring out where they were, where things were, and all their solstices and all that, that's a recalibration of everything. And the solstices and the equinoxes are important, because in an equinox, it's called an equinox because if you put up a stick or an obelisk, like an Egyptian obelisk, or a sundial or whatever, you put up a stick or an obelisk, then you can figure out which days are the equinoxes because they're equal. The change doesn't change basically all day. The shadow stays the same. I think that's right. And you even see the temples, places in all over the world, they actually had to rebuild their temple. The foundation, they changed it and tilted it the other way because, you know, their alignment, star alignments were off now. So they actually recalibrated, rebuilt some places. You literally tore down the temple, built the whole thing, and realigned it. Now the question I think that's on a lot of people's mind right now, at least mine, is, you know, are we approaching this change again, and how far are we there to having that happen again? Now, previously, I don't know that any you know, they changed calendars after the fact. Now, what might be interesting, and one of the messages I got one day from Spirit was, it did a very simple thing to explain it to me. It said, take a pen or pencil, right? And I didn't have one, so go find one. I said, I don't want to go find one, you know. And I said, go get it if you want to know. So I did. It said, start spinning the pencil in your hand with your fingers, right? And it says, as you spin it, tilt it. And turn it upside down, and watch what happens. And I did that, and when I got to about the point where the pen was 90 degrees, you know, parallel to the ground, at that point, when I cross 90 degrees, the pen appears, even though you're turning it the same way, appears to be rotating the other way. And I said, oh, I think I get it. Now, what it was trying to tell me was, not only do you have things like poles changing, but the message that I got at that point was that there's something that you might be able to do at that moment. There's this kind of a special moment there at the point of that 90 degrees. And the message I seem to be getting is there's something that you might be able to do with consciousness, and I've talked to Adam about this a little bit, but there might be something if you go into that, and if humans doing ceremony or something knew this was coming and prepared for it, there might be some. The message I seem to be getting is they might be able to do something, especially at that moment as that change was occurring. That's like a kind of a golden opportunity. I don't know. That's all I've got on it. So I don't know, but I know that information that I've seen that. That 90 degrees pop up over and over again. So maybe there's something to it.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think that all the calendars changed and all that. And the question is, are we going to be seeing that? And you know, most of the Egyptian record clearly says that they saw sunrise in the west twice and sunrise in the east twice, and that matches pretty much exactly. It actually does match exactly the Hopi stone. And so, and a lot of them are talking about that now. And so I think that the question on most people's minds that are following this or interested in it, I think, is where is the cycle information to tell us where we're at according to the last time? And if this is the regular cyclic pattern, you know, what is it? And there's a few sources that give some times, but then you have to be aware that they're calculating their years. When you see measurements in years, some of those years were 360-day years. And what's interesting is if you take that 360 and you say their year counts were, now we're at 365, what's the difference? It works out to be about in, 5,000, the Mayan cycle, 5,125 years or 200 years, whatever. It works out to be about, I believe, 3.5 years.
Wow.
So that 3.5 years to 7 years that people talk about,
yep,
that it appears to me that seems to be related between the difference between a 360-day year and a 365-day year.
Well, according to the Shemitah prophecy, which was released by the Orthodox Jews and back in 2001, Daniel's timeline began on August 1st with the total eclipse. And the beginning of those 7 years, time of Jacob's trouble, I think they're saying it begins next November. But before, I wanted to tell you two guys that if you want to hear a really fascinating interview, go to prophecykeepers.com and look down in the archives for the name Thomas O. Mills and listen to his interview, because Thomas was raised up in Hopi. His mother, because of her kindness when she was running a restaurant down at Holbrook, was invited by the tribe to run the cultural center. And Thomas, at night, the elders would take him up on the roof and teach him things. But Thomas discovered that there's all kinds of symbols and cartouches and glyphs all over Egypt, except on the Giza Plateau. And the only symbols on the Giza Plateau are the same symbols that the Hopi use in their religion. And Chief Mike, now let's see, John Lanza, Mina Lanza, his wife, and Mike Lanza, all three of them, as a matter of fact, Mike Lanza, who was the last chief at Oribe, announced that their place of origin was the Middle East. Well, listen, guys, we've got about 4 minutes to go, so we give Don enough time to pay his bills.
Well, maybe Adam should probably tell people a little bit about the gathering coming up in April.
Yes. Well, if we got a few minutes here, yes, it'd be our honor to do that. There's been a call put out from the center, from Guatemala, from our grand elder Don Alejandro, from the Quetzal, to reunite the Eagle and Condor once again for the fourth reunion of the Continental Council of Spiritual Guides of the Americas here, and this will be hosted in northern Arizona, and the tribes will be coming together, the nations, the spiritual guides or leaders. This has been blessed and sanctioned by the Hopis, by specific clans at this time. We have the Water Clan, Bear Clan, Flute Clan, Corn Clan right now backing, along with representatives from Havasupai, the Dene, and many, many others. They're going to be inviting the indigenous people throughout the Americas, also sanctioned and blessed by the Kogis and the Ayahuacos of the Sierra Nevada, and from the Aymaras and the Incans of the South Americas and onward, and then delegates from the Maoris to Asia to Europe will all be welcomed, and all coming their delegates to in support of the Return of the Ancestors gathering. It's a very significant time and aligned with the Mayan calendar on its days set to launch this and to share their prophecies. They're going to be coming to share their prophecies, and our wish is to get this out PBS and or through radio or television. In our meetings, they're ready to share their prophecies and stories with the world directly from the elders themselves.
Well, this is a big deal coming up,
and this is the fourth
round of these meetings, and it's bound to be really special. We got 1 minute left. Any last words, fellas?
Well, I just want to give thanks again, and since Mark called up too, this wasn't scheduled or planned, but everything went A-OK. It was good, and we got full blessings for the mission yesterday, what was delivered at Hopi, and then also for the Return of Ancestors gathering. So everything is in movement and moving forward. And we're blessed to be here with everyone that's listening this evening. It's our honor from our hearts to yours with much gratitude, and we welcome you and hope to see you next year, April 18th to the 28th, 2009, of the Return of the Ancestors Gathering in Northern Arizona.
Well, we'll sure try to be there, and we want to once again thank secretsofanimmortal.com for sponsoring tonight. And Don, we're all done. If you'd like to go ahead and I think we probably went over and do whatever you need to do as far as our last break. But thanks a lot for listening, folks. We really appreciate you.
And below, let the truth be known.
Asia, the Levant, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.